I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You ever wonder what's going on across the country on our campuses? Great article by Victor Davis Hanson. Universities breed anger, ignorance, and ingratitude, and whether or not our graduates are woke and broke. Victor David Hanson joins us, National Review contributor, is the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institute and author of most recently of The Case for Trump. Victor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So exactly what is going on across the country on our campuses today?
Well, it's two things. One is very radical ideology in which people are seen sort of as social warriors in a boot camp and not taught disinterested inductive thinking, but rather certain positions on abortion, global warming, identity politics, illegal immigration in preparation for going out and sort of being on the front lines in the manner of Occupy Wall Street, Antifa, Green Warriors, et cetera, Black Lives Matter. And then the second thing is they're very reactionary because they've got this sort of crony capitalist con where the federal government backs all of these loans, and these 18-year-olds are so told that just come to college and we will give you a bachelor's degree and you'll get a great job. And they major in sociology or environmental studies or ethnic studies or whatever. And the result is they're burdened with about anywhere from $80,000 to $200,000 in tuition, room and board loans. And that affects you and me because we've got a generation that the average age of marriage has gone from 23 to 29. And child rearing has gone from 2.5 children to 1.6. And home buying is static in that age, as is car buying. And so you get people who are highly educated and highly bitter that they were sold a bill of goods. Sort of like you and I going into a car dealer and being shown a really nice new model of all these extras and accessories that we can't afford, and yet we get in the mood that we're told this is going to make us feel better. We buy it, and then we can't make the car loan, so the government comes in and guarantees them. And it's not healthy for anybody, whether you go to college or not.
I truly enjoyed your article. And although you didn't say this but in so many words, but I left with the impression that covertly our kids are getting a minor in victimology and they're not even aware of it.
They are. I think there's a race on campus as in the wider society. You saw that with Elizabeth Warren. Ward Churchill, the professor who faked an identity, that everybody wants to find some entree into being a victim because they feel that pays rewards, either psychological or real. And so on campus, everybody is hypersensitive. You know, if you're one quarter Mexican American, all of a sudden you get outraged when you see somebody with a poncho on. Or if you're 1/16th Native American, you can't stand anybody when you hear them do the tomahawk cheer at a football game. And the point is, then you are given special deference or sensitivity the more that you can become a victim. But the problem is that what made this country great weren't victims, and it weren't victimizers. It wasn't victimizers either. It was people who were sort of fearless and took risk and were well versed either in the real world or they were well educated. But when you go to university and it's a zero-sum game, and somebody's taking all of these courses in race, class, gender, et cetera, therapeutic courses, there's something that's being missed. And so that's what I meant where they're also ignorant and arrogant. That's a bad combination because somebody who's been in academia for 35 years, I can tell you that today's graduate, wherever I've taught, is not up to what they were in the early 1980s.
You know, Victor, I always appreciated the Socratic method of teaching, having taught at the university level for about 9 years, obviously not nearly as long as you. I found that there was like little or no appreciation for that methodology.
No, that's considered sort of bourgeoisie or retrograde. And the point now is the university has convinced itself that the toxic wider society, the religions, the corporate world, the government, et cetera, is so biased that they can be biased to counteract that. And so, as I pointed out in the article, it's about 12 to 1, the ratio between Republican and Democratic professors that give to political campaigns, at least. And when you get on campus, there's this climate of fear, and people make the necessary adjustments, both faculty and students. They feel, you know, if I say something about global warming, or if I say that I don't like safe spaces predicated on race, I'm going to be in big trouble, because they can haul me before a student tribunal. They can cut my student funds off. I just won't do it. And so what's also happening is a really deep cynicism. I know on the Stanford campus, I talk to a lot of students that look around both ways, and then they'll come in and see me and just pour out their guts in anger, but they're terrified. And for a campus that really keeps broadcasting that it cherishes diversity, it wants no diversity, at least political or ideological diversity.
And that seems to be what's really missing. You make an interesting point about tenure and the fact that college administrators, in the abstract, they love unions, collective bargaining, as long as that all stays off the campus and away from their own exploited teachers.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I'm speaking to you from a farm, and I farmed as well as taught most of my life, and I can tell you that farmers don't have tenure.
Right.
And you don't have tenure, and you're only as good as your last day at work, like all of us.
Right.
But I do have tenure, and I can tell you that it doesn't make ideological diversity. It used to, but now it's sort of as I said, a merit badge for people who toed the line, and then they get lifetime employment, and you know what would happen in any business if you got lifetime employment guaranteed. And so people are very industrious to publish and to teach and have office hours until that magical sixth year, and then they can't be fired after that. So their work, and this is statistically proven, their work declines in most cases, and they get sort of grumpy, and they talk about retirement, they cut their office hours, etc. It'd be much better just to have 4 or 5 year contracts with provisions that both sides can agree on, and if the professor met them, he would be renewed, and if he didn't, he'd be eliminated. And they don't want tenure, believe me, for part-time lecturers, because they get about 30 cents on the teaching dollar, and they're the backbone of the university. So what's really happened is on both ends, they're hiring these non-teaching administrators, diversity czars, counselors, et cetera, while they're also hiring part-time teachers. And then when a professor retires, they can't afford that high-priced tenure billet, so it's eliminated and chopped up into 2 or 3 part-time teachers with no tenure, no benefits, just hourly wage, and everybody seems happy with it.
And that's kind of a good entree into a statement that you made. And you know, having been an educator and having gone through school like most people for a long, long time, and you were very succinct when you said, elsewhere in the real world, buyers receive guarantees when they pay for services. But that's not what's happening for the consumer when it comes to college.
No, it's not. I've written something about this before, and I don't think I got as much hate mail as I'd ever. And I just said that if universities really want the ACT and the SAT as sort of standardized tests that can verify or reject the evidence of grades in high school, because all high schools are radically different, then why not just have a standardized exit test? So if you got a BA from Hillsdale, or you got a BA from Stanford, or you got a BA from Fresno State, we could find out what you learned. And after 4 years, you could even take the same test. So if you got 600 on the SAT, would you get 650 when you graduated after $250,000? And of course, they don't want to do that at all, because I have a feeling that either the test scores would not go up, or in fact, they might go down.
And there probably wouldn't be an appreciable difference between Stanford, Harvard, Yale.
I don't think so.
And Hillsdale, Tulane, or Loyola, which is 2 local colleges here.
Yeah, I've taught it as a visiting professor at Stanford, where I work now, Pepperdine, U.S. Naval Academy. I was a professor for 22 years at the California State University system. And the only difference is it's harder to get into some universities. So they get, in some cases, if they're not on affirmative action or sports or legacies or the parents gave a lot of money, they're meritocratic. But what they actually learn, I don't think, is nearly as rigorous as, at, say, a Hillsdale. So I have a suspicion that there wouldn't be any difference. But they're sort of like Coca-Cola or Nike shoes. They're a brand name. So everybody wants an Ivy League stamp on their, you know, on their certificate, or they can say, I went to Harvard Law. Adam Schiff, we saw that with the House Intelligence Committee. Devin Nunes went to Cal State San Luis Obispo, and then Devin Nunes is at Harvard Law School. We're supposed to think that that conveys with it, you know, ethical behavior and intelligence, when in fact it didn't at all.
How does this change?
I think that there's a lot of things we could do. And one of them is, I think the federal government's got to get out of the loan business and let the private sector come in and let people pick and choose which loans they want, and they'll have to be responsible. And then maybe the university to get students will have to say, you know, if you welch on this loan, we're going to have to pick up the difference. And they won't be so easy to do that. And then the second thing is, I think we have to eliminate tenure. And third, I think donors, they're so well-meaning, they're so generous, alumni, but they have to target their money. If they want to support Western Civ, they just can't give it to the university and say, you know, here's some money. They have to say, this is going to be spent in the following ways, because when it's sort of like giving drugs to an addict. It's well-meaning, maybe, or money to a homeless person, but if you don't know how it's going to be spent, you worsen the problem.
Right. And, you know, to put it in its proper context, the cost of universities has jumped 15 times in the past 40 years. And to use the car analogy, that's like the base model Toyota Corolla back then would now cost $90,000.
That's exactly right. And you would expect that to happen when you create a system in which an 18-year-old is able, without any security, to draw on a $250,000 loan over 4 years, and the person who guarantees that loan is non-existent. It's not a parent. It's the U.S. government. And the university knows that, so they've increased the rate of tuition by about three times
and
the rate of inflation.
And unlike most other loans that are discharged in bankruptcy, an education loan is not.
Absolutely. And again, if they had to pick up, if a car dealer self-finances a buyer and the buyer welches, then the car dealer picks up that if he can't get a loan from bank. And that means the interest rate's a little bit higher. Also, I think it's really important that these universities are creating these multi-billion dollar endowments, and it's all tax-free. And at some point, these socialist universities should say, you know, after you get $5 billion, if you're Stanford or Harvard or Yale or Princeton, everything beyond that will have to be have to be taxable donations. Either that or you have to give it away to some other poor college, maybe share the wealth, since they tend to be socialists in their mentalities, but not when it comes to these very, very huge endowments whose interest is being used on non-educational, non-instructional expenses. You should see the things that they put on symposiums on race, conferences on gender, weekends on class, but not really on the Renaissance or the Enlightenment or things that really matter, Shakespeare or something like that.
You can be a socialist with other people's money, but just not our money.
Seems so, especially in the university. And, you know, you teach 30 weeks a year, so you get 52 weeks off. Excuse me, you get 22 weeks off, and that it's not a hard life, and that's why so many people want to get in on it. I mean, there's 20 applicants for every tenure position, even if these positions are no longer sustainable. And even the university recognizes that you can't afford to hire somebody at 30 weeks a year and pay them $100,000 and give them a blank check for lifetime employment. So they're creeping up to about 40-45% of all units now are taught by part-time teachers in most state schools.
Yeah. It's a problem on multiple fronts, and I suspect that your hate mail is going to increase after this article, but it was well done nonetheless, and we appreciate
okay.
We appreciate you being so forthright.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Victor Davis Hanson, contributor for the National Review and recent author of the book, The Case for Trump. We'll be right back after the break. We want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text 870-870.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.